Hello and welcome to Relatable 2.0. I speak with Lennis Moynihan, also known as Lenny, a licensed professional counselor in Maryland and my sister. I want our audience to get to know Lenny as she will return as one of my visiting experts in future episodes. As long as I have known her, she has been interested and studied human behavior. In this conversation, we demystify therapy, what it is and what it isn't, discuss the qualities of a good therapist and patient, and we learn how the body-mind connection relates to our overall mental health and well-being. Enjoy this episode. I'm super excited for this next iteration of my podcast, which I'm kind of still in the process of naming, but for now we'll just call it Relatable 2.0.
Yeah.
And my idea is to bring in some experts and bring in some different people to talk about a certain theme or topic from a different perspective, which I think could be really interesting and cool. And I think for you, we're going to talk a bit about your view and through your lens as a therapist and a counselor. So, but before we do that, you know, my audience hasn't had a chance to get to know you yet. So I thought we'd have an introductory episode where, you know, we get to know you a little bit better first and kind of hear your background and kind of hear your path. And as I'm sure you've listened to many relatable episodes, the normal kind of long form interview is I talk to people about how they've navigated their life, right? And sort of what were these pivot moments and then how did they learn from them? And I think as it's evolved over time with my background as a career coach, it's turned a lot too around like people and careers and how they've kind of found their spot. So I think it's just, you've had a cool journey to your own practice, right? So I think it'd be cool to learn a bit about that. And then, you know, in future episodes, we'll talk more about your expertise as it relates to these themes.
Okay.
So so maybe we could just first by like introducing yourself, telling us a little bit about your path and how you became a therapist.
Okay. So I feel that I kind of think we're born with certain, you know, we're born personality. And, you know, some things we can change and some things we can't. And so some things I was born with, I'm a highly empathetic individual. I'm a highly sensitive person, which is actually much better understood now than in when I was growing up. There was actually a person who dedicated her study to find out about this and found that 20% of individuals are, and it's like a proven real thing. And you think of the princess and the pea, who she could feel the pea on the 20 mattresses. That would be a highly sensitive person. Learning how to navigate it and be responsible for yourself. I think just a lot of my personality and skill set, I'm also a thinker and I really like to use my mind. And I like problem solving and I like delving into the deep. So I often say that being a therapist is somewhat like being a detective in helping the client navigate through correct questioning and being available in the moment with that therapeutic relationship to help that individual process and figure out, right, whatever they've come for, the issues they're dealing with is kind of like that work that you're doing. It's kind of as a detective going like through the different paths or, you know what I'm saying, kind of trying to figure it all out. And I really enjoy that process. So I think that's how I came to this.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that I, think is important just to note, or for my own experience with you, you know, as someone that grew up with you and had known you my whole life, I think that you are someone who is highly intuitive and you've always been able to see things in people very clearly, you know, before they could, or even, you know, potentially, like I always saw it, and we've had a lot of conversations about this, where you're kind of five steps ahead, right, in terms of seeing things, because I think that is your gift. And then I think over time, as you've grown and evolved, like the patience to sort of help someone else get there.
Yes.
Right. Where it's like, you're not like hitting them over the head with like, this is what's wrong with you, but it's really about, like you're saying, about an exploration. The other thing I think is really important to note, because I think a lot of people listen to this that are maybe at a crossroads in their own path in terms of what they should be doing, or mm-hmm. they've already had one career and they're trying to look for another career. And mm-hmm. I think it's really inspirational that this is something that's kind of been in you for a long time. And then you kind of made a choice to pursue it, but it was a little later. Yeah, and I think absolutely. That like,
yeah.
Maybe just talk a little bit about that in terms of what was the motivation to really, when you decided to say, yeah, I'm going to go forward and do this. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I got married and I had kids and I wanted to stay home, and I was lucky enough that I could do that.
Yeah.
And during that time, that was a huge time of searching for me. I went to acupuncture school for a year. You know, I got certified in reflexology. There's a huge holistic component in my life and that I'm also interested in. And even in my therapeutic relationships, I bring that same holistic belief, which is body, mind, and spirit, because I believe everything is intertwined and everything affects everything. And I, way back in the day, I had majored in psychology and religion and had actually thought I was going to go on in theology and was going to do something with theology until I found out you needed a language such as German, which I took one class and went and withdrew. I do not have the gift, right, of language. That had always kind of been the goal. And then I, you know, got married and had kids and, you know, did all kinds of things, you know, while I was home, went through an experience myself that was a huge healing journey, got very, very ill. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of those things, God has a perfect timing. So when my kids got older, of course, and when they were going off to school, then it was time, right, for me to go ahead and go back to school. So that's kind of how that got me there.
And one thing I think is so cool about our experience doing this and our future conversations, like I feel like I get the benefit of your wisdom and your counsel a lot. Mm-hmm. And so this opportunity for you to share some thoughts and to, you know, kind of one of the things I love about doing this is it's a forum, kind of a one-to-many forum. And sure. There are things that I'm super passionate about that I like to talk about. And I feel like, you know, sometimes I feel like for the conversations that we have and, you know, like I said, the counsel you give me or just your perspective, you know, I think it would be so great for other people to be able to experience that too. So I, you know, I really mean it when I say I'm like, you know, grateful that you're on here and that you're willing to do it. Okay, so let's talk, because one of the things that, and the other thing I love about you too, is I was just telling Paul about this, like when I was talking to you, like I think you, because of what you've been through and who you are as a person, like you have I would say like a distinct approach, thought, feeling about things. Like, you know, I think that there's a lot of stuff that's like watered down now, you know, and I'm even victim to that too, because
Of course.
Like, oh, I don't want to piss anybody off. I don't want to say something that's going to be really provocative. And what I really like about you is you're convicted. And I feel like that is rare. And I think you're convicted in a way that like makes me think about things or, you know, so anyway, I think again, like that's going to be kind of a cool way for us to learn more about, you know, your perspective and how you approach these things. So let's talk a little bit about like your approach. Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit about kind of that detective hat, but tell me a little bit like in just the way that you practice, because there's so many different ways and modalities
so many different. So I'm super old school.
Okay.
I will share that when I did go back to school, I had shared with someone that, remember, I was older.
Yeah.
I had done psychoanalysis for 7 years, which is, you know, 4 hours on the couch a week, and, you know, and they looked at me like I was a dinosaur. They were like, what? You know, are you kidding? So I'm more old school. I believe in talk therapy. I believe that's what actually is very healing. I believe the therapeutic relationship is the fundamental piece of doing therapy that helps the person to transform. Mm-hmm. And so the theories I come out of are client-centered, which is Rogerian, and psychodynamic, which, you know, everybody knows Freud, and Carl Jung, who I felt did bring in the more spiritual piece to it. He brought in this piece of individuation, but also the collective, right? Because kind of we're having both those experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And then family systems is a big piece of it for me. And Bowen theory is, I love the way he sees the family as a unit or a living organism. And then functioning, you know, how is this organism functioning? And then noticed certain things happen in a dysfunctional family, such as triangulation, scapegoating, things that go on in a family, right? That then affect the child. And then we talk about persona, which is created. And so another thing, a lot of times when people think of trauma, they always think, you know, trauma is, you know, you were in a war, or, you know, your friend saw somebody get murdered, which of course that is huge trauma. But if you grow up in a highly dysfunctional family or an addictive alcoholic family, there's a consistent trauma that you experience in that family unit, and that creates complex trauma that a lot of times you don't even know about. And then when you go out into the world, I think what a lot of people don't understand, because there's a huge subconscious component, which I believe what happens is when we're growing up in our families, we are constantly getting meta messages and imprints. It's like a computer, and you're just taking in this information. So the way a family communicates is overtly and covertly. So you're not, a lot of these messages that you get, they're not always verbal. It's not, you know, you're a family unit and you're picking up on all these different things that are going on. And so when you go out into the world, whatever role you took on, we're talking about a dysfunctional family right now, not functional, but in a dysfunctional family, that role you take with you, and then that's how you interact with others. So a big part of my focus also is patterns and going back, working through the family system to understand how you coped in that family. And then how's that showing up in your relationships now? And how do you get to authentic self?
Yes. And can we just park for a minute on the subconscious? Because I think this is something that I didn't fully appreciate for a long time, and actually had been in therapy in my 20s. And similarly, but I've talked on this show a little bit about it, but like I've had, you know, panic attacks, and I had, you know, all sorts of things that I worked through. But the thing that I didn't realize and I didn't fully appreciate is like this kind of context of the subconscious versus like the conscious. And like you and I had a conversation once where I was like, look, you know, I'm almost 50. I'm functioning pretty well in the world. I kind of know, you know, so what is it really, the subconscious, right? And like, why is it, I would say, a factor, you know, depending on, to your point, like if you haven't had that, they say that capital T trauma versus little t, right? Yeah. But like, I'm learning that this subconscious part is a really big piece of overall, like if you're someone that's trying to reach like overall like contentment in your life, or feeling like you want to be functioning in your life the way you want to, that's where I feel like the subconscious stuff comes in. So can you talk a little bit about like what it is?
Relatable is sponsored by TFA Soft Skills, your one-stop shop for workshops, coaching, speaking, and soft skills development. If you'd like to hire Teresa or any members of her team, please visit www.tfasoftskills.com for more information.
For example, we're talking about growing up in this family and you're getting meta messages. So let's say you grew up in a family and the message kind of coming from your parents, again, it's not necessarily verbal, okay? But, you know, life is lack and you can't get what you want. So there's this imprint that goes on. You know, your perception becomes, well, I can never get what I want. I can't get what I want. So then you go into the world, and let's say you're ambitious, but let's say no matter how hard you try, you can't get where you want to go, right? You can't, there's some sabotaging piece of it or something's going on. So we also talk about internal narrative. And so what's the internal narrative, which we don't always know what we're really thinking or saying to ourselves. So let's say you come to therapy and, you know, we start working together.
Yep.
And, you know, I notice in a lot of the sessions, you keep making these comments about, oh, I'm so stupid, or I'm not good enough, you know, something along these lines, you know, these negative things that you're saying, or I can never get what I want. Mm-hmm. So then we try to kind of explore, well, why are you saying you can never get what you want? Right. And we kind of go below the conscious to kind of get to, well, where did that come from? Where did that start? Where did that narrative grow?
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's kind of getting that to the conscious where you, let's say all of a sudden you recognize, wow, you know, growing up in my family, we were kind of told all the time, you can't really have what you want. Right. So it's this huge imprint. It isn't just, you know, you're lacking confidence or self-esteem, right? It's a bigger piece than that.
Right.
And then once you are able to see it, then we really work on changing the narrative. If you just change the narrative, but you don't get to where did this come from, it's much harder to get it to move.
Right.
That's just a small example, but no, something along those lines.
Yeah, I think it's really helpful. And I think it's I think for people that are like linear and logical, which I am a more mm-hmm. linear, like I'm a thinker more than a feeler, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. I think it's helpful to understand that there is this other piece that is unseen.
Yeah.
And and through the therapeutic relationship, it becomes seen and it's mm-hmm. kind of cool to like yeah. uncover it, which leads me to kind of this next question, which hopefully, you know, like this idea around, is there still a stigma around it? You know, mm-hmm. do you feel like, and now that you've been in this for a while, like, are you seeing more people approaching therapy that wasn't necessarily in the capital T, right? Like, I think there is still some stigma, but I feel like we have an opportunity here, kind of a call to mm-hmm. action. Like, if you're someone that's struggling, or if you're someone that like mm-hmm. feels unseen, or you have these parts of you that you wish were different, mm-hmm. like therapy is a great way to get there.
Yeah, it is. And you need to go to a therapist that does that work. And for example, CBT is great, right? It's cognitive behavioral therapy. And let's say you were talking about the panic or anxiety. So of course, if you go to someone, you're going to do some of that work, right? Because it's behavioral change and that's important. However, from where my theory of where I come from is, yeah, that's good. And that's creating a skill set that you didn't have before. And we can work on that. However, we still need to figure out, why are you having these panic attacks? What is going on? And this would be right. So I believe in a lot of instances when we start having really bad anxiety or panic, it's actually ourselves saying, this isn't working anymore. My life isn't working because I'm not on all my coping skills that I used in this dysfunctional family that served me to survive are now not feeding me, and I'm not getting what I want. It's no longer serving me. And so now I start having anxiety or panic or feel trapped or whatever it is, because I actually am not honoring myself and I'm not being myself.
Is it always family of origin, or like, well, let's say you had a pretty healthy family functioning unit, and mm-hmm. then you go to college and you have some sort of experience in terms of mm-hmm. the friends you make, or like mm-hmm. kind of that next chapter, something happens, right? Is it always family of origin, or could you be someone that didn't have panic attacks? All of a sudden you find yourself, you know, you're maybe in your 30s and you start having them, and it's not necessarily family of origin, but it, you know, can it be other triggers, I guess?
Well, yeah. I mean, you mean situational. So let's say
maybe.
You you know, you get in a situation, let's say you meet some friends and then you have a, you know, horrible experience and they reject you and abandon you, you know,
right.
like,
Yeah.
Like just awful, hard, like nothing you've ever experienced before. Of course, like
that, like imprints too.
Kind of, yeah. And that's like more situational for sure. But the work that I do with people is always, we go back to family systems to start.
Okay.
Because in this example that I just used, the question might beg, why did you end up befriending these horrible people? Right. Like, again, like, right. What, like,
yeah.
So, you know, so yeah.
And then we've had a few conversations. I know you feel passionately about this, so I think it's worth talking about. And you've touched on it a little bit, but I think it'd be great if someone's pursuing a therapeutic relationship, like what is a good therapist? Let's do kind of like, what's a good therapist? And then what are some of the behaviors of a therapist that you wouldn't necessarily support, right? Like what, you know, from your perspective, you've done a lot of work on yourself and now you're in this profession. And so you've seen a lot and you've seen clients and you've seen clients go to different people. So you have a lot of, I feel like you have a lot of data and a lot of knowledge to be able to comment on this.
Yeah. So one thing, obviously a lot of clients wouldn't know, right, whether their therapist did their own personal work or not.
Right.
However, I would say that's a huge, important aspect for the therapist. When I was in school getting my master's, you only had to have 20 hours of therapy, which I think is woefully low. And there were some people that didn't even want to have to do that. And for me, that was a red flag. Because if I'm not going to do my work and then I'm going to sit, I want to be on both sides of the seat. So I know what you're going through when you're doing the work.
Right. Right.
So I have an understanding, and then you've got your counter transference and your transference going on. I can be much more aware of that because of all the work I've done. I can catch it really quickly. If I haven't done any of my own work and then I'm sitting with you, it could really become a train wreck. Mm-hmm. So, but that's, you know, that's, you're not going to always know that. I think the bigger things are around is there movement in the therapy? Are you gaining insight? Are you becoming self-aware? Are you having better self-awareness? That's a huge one, right? And in that, then becomes the changed behavior, right? The work is, you can't change the behavior till you really understand it, understand what's going on. And that can take time. It's not going to happen in two sessions. But if you're noticing you're not getting anywhere, or you're spinning your wheels, or maybe the therapist isn't asking questions and isn't taking you down maybe a path that you're resistant or that you don't want to go to. Do you know what I'm saying? Or the therapist isn't helping you kind of stay in that uncomfortable place to kind of get past it. And look, even there are some times when the therapist is a little bit more, hey, feet to the fire. You know, you know, I'm not going to let you avoid this. If it starts being like a coffee clutch and they're your best friend, that you might, might not be the best fit for you.
Right. It's so tricky, right? I could see, you know, there's obviously lots of like movies, maybe even sitcoms about the idea that like, as you, as a person kind of going to another person and kind of opening up and like, how do you not create like a bond, right? Or like, more so maybe for the patient, right? That feels because they're having some breakthroughs and they're able to move forward and like, they're going to feel very attached to their therapist. Right. But the idea that like friendship, or to your point, like there is, it is still like in a, I don't know if this is the right term, but it's still kind of a professional relationship, right? Mm-hmm. In the context of, for both people.
Yeah. I don't really refer to them as patients. I refer to them as clients.
Just
as you said, but you know, maybe a psychiatrist might call them a patient.
Interesting.
But so I think there's a healthy boundary that is required, and the therapist does set that tone and sets that boundary.
Yeah.
And it should be felt like it's an appropriate boundary. Of course, the therapeutic bond is really important. But that doesn't you don't feel like that's your best friend. Do you get what I'm saying? This therapy is work. You should be doing work. If you're not doing work, then I don't think you're being served. It isn't easy. Therapy isn't easy. And also it's not for everybody. Therapy right. isn't for everybody.
Right, right.
You know, it isn't. If, you know, you have to want, you have to be at a point in your life where you really, let's say you're kind of at this point and you're like, my life just isn't working.
Right.
And I kind of want to figure out why, and you're willing to do that work and uncover it, then that therapy is good for you. If it's really hard for you to look at yourself, if it's really a challenge and you kind of don't want to do it and you're more comfortable always looking outward at everybody else or what they're doing, therapy might not be the best right. avenue for you.
What do you think about people that want to go, they have thought a lot about it and they're afraid to pursue it? So there's an awareness, right? Mm-hmm. I want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But they've never really been exposed to it. They've never done it. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, it's kind of this foreign thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of people that kind of sit in this space and think mm-hmm. like, I think I could benefit, but I'm afraid of X. Like they, and you can't even name what the fear is necessarily.
Okay.
So how do we help someone that's maybe in that state of mind to kind of, so someone asked me the other day, they were like, well, what's it really like? You know, so I don't know, maybe yeah. that is part of yeah. it. Being like, what can they expect yeah. if someone's kind of afraid and doesn't know what it
well,
is?
Well, I mean, I think part of it is also finding the good match, right? So I think one thing is if you reach out to somebody and let's say you go a couple of times and you just maybe just don't feel connected to the, you know, it's okay to say, you know what, this isn't the right person. Let me try somebody else.
Right.
Another thing I would say, I think it is important to look when you're looking for a therapist, look, what is their theory? What are they based in? Mm-hmm. Right. Because, you know, you're going to have different results depending on the type of person that you go to and what, right. What is their focus? Again, right. I'm just using CBT because it's just kind of an easy thing. That's so much more behavioral, right? We're just really working on changing behaviors. I'm not saying you don't do some analytic work, but it's mostly that person might not be as Rogerian driven or family systems. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? So part of it also is what is this person providing? Right. And what am I looking for?
Yeah.
What is going to help me to be motivated?
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, in my own path with this, like you and I've talked about like person-centered and I think that helped me understand a bit more mm-hmm. about that. I kind of looked it up and learned more about it. Yeah. And the yeah. idea that like, you know, the kind of more internal exploration mm-hmm. and relationship to self versus mm-hmm. like, to me, the cognitive, which is powerful, especially if you're in a place sure. where you can't do things, like cognitive sure, is course. Great because it yes. really helps you be yes. more functioning in your life. I think it's kind of like, it's the next layer deeper of like, okay, yeah. now I'm sort of functioning, but I want to repair this so that it's not an ongoing lifelong
right.
issue, you yeah. know? So that's where the kind of think that deeper
right.
and the person centered is, it's like, I feel like even more so now, but certainly even in my generation, like there's just so much a focus on the external,
yes,
right? External is going to solve it, yes. whether it's like booze or drugs or yep. TV mm-hmm. or, you know, name your distraction.
Sure. Yeah.
The external is what feeds you. And so the idea of like, wait, let's come back to you as an individual.
And I mean, in my work, there is this cognitive piece around narrative, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if people could stop and start listening to how do they speak to themselves in a day, you know, yeah. when you're already anxious and then you're saying things to yourself like, I'm so stupid. Oh my God, you know, what's wrong? Right. And you're beating yourself up, let's say, okay. Yeah. You know, it's so interesting how we can have compassion for other people, but then for ourselves, we're just so awful. We can be so awful. So there is that piece, right? That behavioral piece of I've got to put a stop sign up in my mind and you have to change the dialogue. You don't just stop it. Then you have to put something else in. Like, well, that's okay. I'm feeling anxious right now. You know, of course I made that mistake, right? It's the difference of how you talk to yourself in a day. I don't think people understand. That's literally half the battle.
So interesting. I was listening to a podcast once and they were talking about like judgment and judging mm-hmm. others and themselves. And they said mm-hmm. they were kind of going on this like meditative journey to try to like note when they were judging, yeah. whether it was they were judging yeah. someone else or themselves. Yeah. They said it was so fatigue. There was so much fatigue and exhaustion. They couldn't even keep up with it for one day. Because you're constantly, yeah, yes. whether it's yes. outward, you know, from the spiritual aspect, yes. right? You try to not be as judgy, but like yes. it is a constant recording, mm-hmm. right? Like you're mm-hmm. just always judging things, like mm-hmm. either, you know, outside mm-hmm. of you or yes. inside. So yes. even that awareness of like, yes. where are you doing that? And, yes. and like, is it serving you or right. people? Yeah.
It's critical. It's a critical nature, right? And there is a piece of that in our, we're very external. Our society is much more extroverted and external than introverted. So yeah. there is a piece of that that goes on. And then we talk about acceptance, right? There's this huge piece around acceptance, right? This idea that, you know, you think about how hard it is to change yourself.
Right.
It's really hard. So the idea that you think you're going to change someone else is, you know,
well,
it's like Mount Everest. I mean, the spiritual piece to me is like me trying to keep my backyard clean for a day. Like you're saying, I've probably judged by, you know what I'm saying? These things that I'm constantly working on, right? As a my spiritual piece that I'm always working on to show up kindness, love, forgiveness, right? That's the goal as a Christian, right? But we're human, but just that alone, yeah, right? Yeah. Is right. So I'm now thinking I'm going to be able to change somebody else.
Right. That is something that I think is worth also mentioning here, which is the older I am, the more work I do, the more I, you know, learn about this, it always comes back to me.
Absolutely.
So like, I know I've come to you frustrated about certain things, sure. right? Marital woes or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'll say to you, oh, it's all this person, right? It's all him. Mm. And then you'll be like, and you'll have a very good way of like, you know, getting me sort of off the defensive and more in the like, okay, well, kind of what's happening that's, you know, creating right. your experience here. Right. And then the more you start to like uncover it, it's like, oh, I have an expectation or a need.
Yes.
And I'm unable to communicate that to this yes. person.
Right.
So it has, it the more I learn and the more right. I evolve, it's like, it's rarely about that other person.
Right.
And it's really about yourself and the way that you operate and the behaviors and the habits and all those things. Yeah. Right. So it's like, it's yes. just so interesting because you're like, oh, it's them. They're triggering yes. me. It's yes. their fault.
Yeah. And that's, let's talk about couples for a minute because I'm yeah. kind of on the fence about couples.
Okay.
Because I feel you still have to do your own work, like period. So I think a lot of times when you come in as a couple, I've experienced this quite a bit. They're coming in and one of the two really has decided it's the other person. And they're coming in because if the other person just changes, they're going to be good. So I want to just do a shout out to anybody that's thinking of going to couples. If this happens to be you,
yeah,
I would recommend you go to individual therapy instead. It takes two to tango. And in all the couple work I've done, it's you've got all these patterns going on. And we talk about the subconscious and all the, and think of it this way. In every marriage, the two people came with about 10 to 20 suitcases. And those suitcases, right, is all your history coming with you. Yeah. And so all those patterns are all right. That shows up in the relationship. You don't get into the cycles that you get into when you do come to therapy, unless the two of you are triggering each other. So it is difficult if you keep that mindset. Let's say you go to couples for a year, but the mindset is really deep down. Yeah, but that it's that person, they need to change. You're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
No, keep going.
I was going to say, and I found that if you do, so let's say you're in a marriage and there's a lot of conflict and there is this pattern or cycle going on. And it shows up, right? In therapy, it shows up over and over. We're seeing this pattern that's going on. If I work with the person individually and help that person to change their behavior, for them to understand, let's do people pleasing as an example. Mm-hmm. So you're in the relationship and it's kind of, one's kind of more the user, one's kind of the giver taker, whatever you want, however you want to call it. Which I also do want to say, I think there's this idea around the giver is somehow better than the taker. You have to have both. So there's no one's better. It's the same when we're talking codependency. You know, I'm not talking, sometimes you do take, sometimes you do give. Right. I'm talking in a codependent relationship. So let's say the giver is feeling taken advantage of, all these things, right? Because they're not advocating for themselves. They don't know how to do that. They don't know how to, let's say they get, and so what ends up happening is they get in a big argument and they don't know how to stop the argument. So the more we work one-on-one, hey, you know what, when it gets to here, you're actually allowed to remove yourself, mm-hmm. right? You're actually allowed to say, I need a timeout. I'll come back in about 20 minutes because my system, my whole nervous system will have calmed down by then. And I can change the trajectory of this conversation because I won't be up here anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. Or you can advocate for yourself and say, you know, no, I really don't want to do that. Whatever that looks like. Right.
Right.
So the more that one person can make those changes, the relationship inevitably changes.
Yeah.
And also, I want to say one more thing. When that happens, it's this person, the person over here, they're not exactly happy when it's first changing, because now all these dynamics and pattern, now it's not their stuff they've been doing is now no longer working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. Like I think it's a good point around, you know, people pleasers and givers and the idea that, like, you know, you put other people before yourself and, you know, I'm one of these people, which I've learned over time, you're getting something by being that kind of person.
Of course. Absolutely.
And so your point around the giver and the taker, I think, is so important because the givers can learn from the takers and the takers can learn from the givers. Absolutely. And so the optimal, I think the ideal is you're a blended human that can do both.
You want it to be balanced.
Right, balanced, right. So mm-hmm. I just think, you know, there's sometimes there's this, you know, the, like you said, like there's a positive, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. connotation or stereotype for the giver, people yes. please, you know, because yeah. that's a, sure, it's a more pleasant
yeah.
vibe.
Look at how nice they are. But it's like right. you're saying, you're trying to get a need met. And let me also yes. just say in yes. this, we're talking codependent. I am not talking normal. Of course, sometimes you give, sometimes the normal balance of reciprocation. I'm not talking about that.
Yeah.
I want to talk about, we talked a little bit about the Red Book, which is Adult Children of Alcoholics, which I love. And I recommend yeah. it to everybody that either grew up in an alcoholic family, addictive family, or dysfunctional family, because I think it's really helpful to understand characteristics that many of us share, right? It's the same as the alcoholic. When you do Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, what that, you know, the 10 steps, you know what I mean? There are characteristics to an addict.
Mm-hmm.
We can see what they are. It's the same for people that grew up in those families or those dysfunctional families. So we've talked about this. A huge issue around this is abandonment. And it's very, we talk about the unconscious. You're not walking around thinking to yourself, I'm afraid I'm going to be abandoned. I'm afraid I'm going to be abandoned. That's not what you're thinking. But when you grow up in a very dysfunctional family, you probably already were abandoned by your parents or by the addict or whatever went on. And so whatever coping skills you learned in that family to get those needs met and overcompensated, you are now doing in your relationship, let's say we're talking about a marriage, you're doing it in the marriage now. And the reason it's so terrifying to change that behavior is because subconsciously you're afraid of being abandoned. It's a conditional, right? It's a condition. It's a conditioned relationship.
Mm. And it's only through your own work, like you mentioned the Red Book, like your kind of own work through some of those things that you, I think the codependent thing is confusing. Like when you've been married, you know, we're coming up on 23 years. You've been married longer than that.
Yeah, sure.
You can't help but have some sort of integration with this person,
yeah, of
right?
Course. No, yeah.
So I think it is interesting to think about, like, what are some of the more codependent behaviors versus what's like more the healthier balance, to your point around like what, and kind of knowing the difference and seeing where you behave maybe more codependently or mm-hmm. vice versa. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where therapy helps, or even the Red Book. I'll put that in the show notes too, to make sure that people.
Teresa's book, Soft Skills I Learned the Hard Way, is now available for purchase on our website at tfasoftskills.com or found on Amazon. She writes about epic fails throughout her career and how she learned from her mistakes so you don't have to. The book is full of cheat codes on how you can differentiate yourself when it matters, like in interviews, trying to get that promotion, or being a first-time leader. As always, thank you, Relatable Community.
Just really more about, are you, it's kind of like you're saying, you know, are you doing things because you want to? And listen, of course, sometimes you do something for your spouse, just, you don't feel like it, but you do it. That's, you know, I'm talking, it's more on this consistent basis where you kind of are sacrificing self for the other person to keep the peace, whatever that looks like, instead of finally looking at the person and going, no, I'm not doing that. Or I don't want to do that. Or, you know, I hate doing that and I've done it for 10 years and I don't want to do it anymore. Right. You do know when you are not being true to your authentic self.
Mm.
And that's when we're talking about behaviors that you're not honoring yourself.
I have this funny
other person first.
I have this funny example where, poor Paul's getting a lot of exposure on this episode, but who cares? So he's very diligent on his weekends. He loves his morning coffee and his crossword puzzle, and then he makes a to-do list.
Uh-huh.
And his to-do list is very Paul-centric for the house or for, but it's very things that Paul wants to do for Paul, right? And my thing, I would wake up and I'd be like, what do the kids need today? What does Paul need today? What does the dog need today? Right? Yeah. I don't have my own Teresa to-do list that's based on what I need and want. So I would, over time, I'd be like, and the whole week, I'd be like irritated about him and his list. I'm like, well, you and your list, you guys doing good? And then I was like, well, why don't you have your own list? Like, why? And I can learn from him versus being irritated by him. And like, if there's something I need from him, I can ask for it. Yeah. But it's just this very interesting lens shift of like, instead of being irritated at him for actually, I think, having a healthy behavior of like, hey, it's my weekend and I got to listen.
It's me time. It's me time. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I'm learning in my advanced age of like, that's an education. I can learn from him and I can figure out what's my list. And maybe my list is I'm choosing to do some for the kids because I like that. It's just, interesting to like own your choices.
Yes.
And
that's
like
huge.
And then understand, Yeah, it's really interesting. And that comes through work.
Yes. And I think I love where, you know, you don't say I have to, you say I choose to. I have to is so unempowering. Mm. When you start saying I'm choosing, even if it's dysfunctional behavior.
Yeah.
You say, well, I'm choosing to do it. I'm not a victim. Victimhood doesn't get you anywhere. And then again, that's that external thing we talk about where all these other people have more power than you do.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
A couple more questions. One is just around the total mind, body, spirit connection. We didn't spend a lot of time on that. And I think it'll come up again as we talk through these other topics. I think I'd like to learn just a little bit more when you, because you have done so much work, both like in like research and intellectually and reviewing these things. And I think and experiencing them, and I've learned a lot from you in this way. So just talk a little bit about that, like just why you feel like that connection is so important, that it isn't just your mind. It isn't, you know, it's not like they're three separate
Well, I
entities.
mean, there's a lot of studies now. I mean, I don't have them on hand. We can find them if you want to include them. Like, we have cellular memory. So there's no such thing as, well, my head's here and I'm, no. We're one. And fascinating studies have been around organ transplant, especially heart transplant, where the person gets the heart. And this was one of them. And they woke up and they were like, I think I'm not sure if this is 100%, but it was like they wanted fast food. And they never ate fast food. And everybody was like, what? And lo and behold, they eventually somehow found out who had donated the heart, and that person loved fast food. So I love that. It's so cool. It's so cool. But just when you look at childhood trauma, like we're talking about this chronic childhood trauma, we see a change in the frontal cortex. We see a change in the amygdala. We know that our nervous system is ramped up on high. This is just right. These are bodily ex right responses, right? There's no, we're not separate. Everything is one. So everything affects everything else. And I'm not sure how we got to this place where we don't think that way, but right, it's all together.
Yeah, I'll speak for that because I think I saw it as sort of separate parts, and I think it's because the integration of it all, maybe one kind of hard concept to understand, but two, it's easier to manage if you, I think sometimes if you think of things as distinct parts. So like, you know, I've talked to you about like gut, they've said mind gut now, right, is so
Oh yeah,
connected. And
so
I would
connected.
be like, I don't think my stress, I think I know, I know how to manage my stress now. Like, and the fact that the body, you know, I'm learning more for me because I'm more of a thinker, that my body has these physical responses because I'm not feeling, right? So I think for me, part of it is like denial, maybe, of like, I don't
Sure.
want to think these parts are integrated.
Sure.
And then it's like, guess what?
Yeah.
Guess what? They are. And your
Oh, yeah.
body tells you. You're like,
Oh,
you
yeah.
said the panic attacks, and that's another thing, like for people that are depressed or panic, or like, you know, your body's telling you something.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Absolutely. I absolutely love that.
All right, I
Yes.
have two other questions that I'm gonna throw at you. One is you know, in my world of sort of soft skills development, and the fact that I am so impassioned by them, and I think they're so important, and I feel like, frankly, we're in a crisis to some respect with some of these less
Sure.
experienced generations and their ability to do them. And so, in the context, I mean, obviously, in a therapeutic relationship, there's like it's soft skills based. And so, I'm just curious, though, as a therapist, maybe in that context, what have you found if you think about like, you know, there are more the less the hard skills of kind of your methodology and your approach, but the soft skills of like, you know, obviously, you know, listening or interpreting or influencing or collaboration, or, you know, when you think kind of through those types of skills, when as a therapist and a counselor, what do you think are the one or two that are most important?
If you'd like to advertise with Relatable, please email us at info@tfasoftskills.com. Now back to the show.
I think really the most important thing is being present and being present and being able to really listen and to validate the client's experience and to have an understanding of that experience is, I think, the that's really important.
And I would expect, just like the rest of us, you know, as a therapist, you in your own life have a lot of distractions. You in your own life have, right? So it's kind of like to be that present in that moment and to be kind of, you must almost like have to, it's an effort and an intention of like, I'm here, I'm right, you know, I'm doing this right now, and everything else has to kind of take a back seat
Yes.
to what's going on with the client.
Yeah, I mean that is yeah.
Right? Like table
Yeah,
stakes.
absolutely. That's that time is theirs, and that is the focus, and that is what you that's what you're focused on. You're
All
not
right, and
focused
then
on anything else.
the
Yeah.
last one, which I don't, I'm very, I don't think I'm gonna know what the, I don't know what you will say about this, which
No.
is I often ask people, if you were to go and kind of put your arm around, let's say, like your 20-year-old self or 22-year-old self, and you were gonna give her some guidance about the path, right? Your path in particular. Not that you would change it. I'm not looking, because some people will say to me, well, things happen the way they happen, and that's how they're supposed to happen. So I'm not saying like, let's course correct anything majorly. I think about it in terms of like, if you were to put your arm around her and say, this might make the path a little bit easier for you. This might, like, what are some of the things that you've learned as, you know, the mature self, right? That you could kind of put your arm around Lenny and be like, okay, let me give you a little advice. What would you tell her?
I think for me, you know, growing up in a dysfunctional family that we did,
Yeah.
I don't know if this is really going to answer your question. I think the coping skills I acquired in our family were a huge I could we start over? I had to
Yeah.
start this over. I'm trying to think of how I want to say this. You're going to edit this, right? I, because what I, oh, do you want to post your recording for a minute? Because I'll, well, or you can keep recording, but I'll tell you. I think for me, what I have learned is I was so misunderstood. And that's what made my life so much harder because it took so long for me to actually understand who I was, because I put on such a persona to survive in our family. But I don't know if that's the answer you're looking for.
Well, I
But
guess
that's the
the answer
truth.
would be like,
That's the truth.
how do you, how would, how could she, so I love that. I love that, like, she was very misunderstood. And so how.
I mean, I was so good at it. Everyone in our family saw me a certain way. And they still sometimes do. And it's not at all who I am. It just isn't. I'm not a fighter. I don't like fighting. I hate it. I don't, everybody always, I hate it. I can't stand it. I don't like fighting. I don't like all these things. I don't like them. But for me and our family, that's how I got heard and seen.
So maybe with the guidance.
And let me also just say, and I just this part of my personality, which is justice and fairness for all, overrode any intimidation I had by dad. And he would say things that I just thought were ridiculous. I couldn't, I would be like, are you, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Like, I couldn't, like, do you know what I mean? It wasn't bravery. It was my person, I was like, I can't, that's, I, it's ridiculous.
So would the counsel be, or the advice to her be, show more of who you are?
Yeah, but I didn't know who I was. You said 22. I wouldn't have known to say that to my.
No, but I mean 20, like, so I, yeah, it's more like 22 to now. Like, now that you know so much now, could you say to her, it's okay to be your authentic self. Like, maybe that's, it's
Oh, I know what I would have said to myself.
okay, here we go. What is it? What would you have said?
Okay, wait, hold on. Okay. So we were talking about codependent behaviors, and one of the ones I took on, well, I took on one of over responsibility and caretaking. So what I would say to my younger self is get that 500 bag of rocks off your back that you carry up a mountain every single day.
That feeling of responsibility.
That's what I would say. Now, the whole everything, the energy, the people, the metaphor for me when I had my hip surgery, I could see it so clearly in spirit. I had been walking up a mountain with a 500 bag pound of rocks every day for years.
Awesome.
It's actually tragic, but awesome that I could drop down the bag of rocks.
Yes. And that it would free her.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's the answer. I don't know if that's the right.
No, why, yeah. There's a, no, there's no right or wrong answer. Right. It's like,
and I don't know if that's too deep, if that's too esoteric.
No. I mean, I think we all have like, I think that's why I love the question, because I think people come at it from a lot of different perspectives. So
I wish I remember when you said to me, this was years ago. I mean, yeah, I've never forgotten it. I, even at the time, right? We were driving somewhere and we saw a mailman or something. And you looked at me and you said, oh my God, you're the same with everybody. Do you remember this?
You've mentioned it, but I don't.
And your point was, your point was, and it was quite accurate. I was 150% with every single person that showed up. That's what you meant. You meant he's a mailman. Not that you wouldn't say, but you were like,
right.
You don't need to have a 50-minute coffee clutch with the mailman. No, it was true.
Yeah.
I did, of course, at the time, but that is what I'm talking about. I did that.
Yeah.
For years. And for an introvert, it's exhausting. I depleted so much of my energy.
Yeah.
Because that's what I thought I had to do to survive.
I think the idea about, you know, and again, maybe this is a seedling for a future conversation, because I find it fascinating, this the persona, right? And and really like what that means. And I think there's just a lot of people that brush off this stuff, right? And say, like, not that it's like woo-woo or, you know, like you said, esoteric or whatever. But I find, like, especially with age and more experience in life and knowing more people and seeing how people operate in the world, it's fascinating to think of, like, if to have people maybe leave them with this sort of thought, like, you know, what's the persona that you've kind of played in your life, and what is it like fulfilling to you, and is it, you know, matching sort of where you want to be? To your point earlier, if you're someone that's struggling or you're in a bad spot, or you're in a way that you want something to be better, the persona might be an opportunity to investigate.
Well,
that.
And I think a lot of times what you were asking about the panic attacks and the anxiety attacks isn't always the case. In several cases, the persona isn't working anymore because it's not your authentic self, and your authentic self has had enough and doesn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah. And
I truly believe that. I truly believe that. I should have said that because it is true.
Well, and what's fascinating is in my own work that I do, that's obviously very different than your work. I've come to the conclusion that the authentic way in which you relate to people is the way in which you succeed. So I take it to kind of the skill-based level of, like, when I think about how you interview, how you communicate with other people, how you operate in a business environment, like when you're, you know, when you're putting on, to me, your results are not as good as when you are anchored in
yourself.
Yourself. Yeah, and absolutely. So it, that takes.
And people know, right? They pick up on
they
it.
They know. They sniff it out.
Yeah.
Like when I'm in front of a group of 88th graders,
oh my God,
like you cannot,
oh no, you can't
BS them, you know? Yeah. So it's just, it's 100%. Almost like,
yeah,
I love that demographic because it keeps me honest.
Yeah. 100%.
You can't, you know?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on and for, being a part of it. It's been great.
Oh my God. Thank you for including me. It was really, I felt very special. So thank you.
Of course. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Lenny. As a reminder, please rate, subscribe, and leave comments. Until next time, this is Career Coach T. Stay connected.